You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there and welcome. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm back together again here on Cleveland Browns Daily. I am in Tampa where the Browns will take on the Buccaneers tomorrow night in Game 3 of the preseason. Matt in Berea in the Browns headquarters. How are you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. Can't complain. Just an exciting week, I think, for the Cleveland Browns. Exciting week to get back into the swing of things from every level of football, as high school football is upon us tomorrow night as well. And excited, just, you know, really tuning into the college game as well. So all in all, fall is here, and it is time for some football.
Time for some football. How's your week been? I've missed you the last couple of days.
I've been great. You know, just putting in some hard work, you know, really tuning into ClevelandBrowns.com. And when I can't get on the computer, I jump on the mobile app to stay in tune, to see your pretty face, you know, doing your live hits there from the practice field. And really just, and you know, I've texted you, you know, time and time again to see how things are going. And also, you know, ESPN Cleveland, you know, their app to see what, you know, Tony Grossi and, you know, we're going to hear from Mary Kay Cabot. Just the overall take and perception, you know, not being there in Tampa, but to understand the work that's being put in to hopefully see a better product come Friday.
Yeah, and I know one of the things you always get excited about as it relates to this team is the coaching. And I think one of the cool things about the joint practice is there are so many more coaching moments and so much more opportunity to coach than during a game when they have to focus on who's going in and out and those types of things. So I think it was a good learning experience, especially for this team. And these joint practices, I was saying on the radio the other day, I don't even think it's a bad idea to maybe get rid of two preseason games and have, you know, two preseason games total and then two real weeks of joint practice with another team.
Well, and I think it's easy for you to say that. And the one reason I think why, you know, the owners aren't necessarily in kind of like in cahoots in regards to getting rid of two, because the owners put almost all the money in their pocket for these preseason games. So that's why, you know, the onus from a ticket standpoint and, I mean, parking and concessions, why filling up your stadium for these two opportunities in the preseason is really still around. You know, otherwise, you'd shift, you know, your momentum. And when you get into the regular season, it's everybody sharing that profit. And I think that's where, you know, the crossroad really comes. But I can understand the value that you're talking about. And I think it's why, even post-CBA, it's an opportunity for you to create a better test in training camp than you can create, even with a very solid, experienced, you know, veteran-laden roster. You can create an experience unlike any other going against someone else, because it just – it forces everyone to step up, and it forces everyone to kind of know that the eye in the sky is judging everything they do, because it's different than the two or three other weeks that you spend in Berea or, you know, your training facility, wherever it is you host training camp.
Sure, and I think it is a neat thing, though, these practices. And did you do many of them? I know we talked about this before.
Never.
But did you do many?
I never did any against another team. So and be very honest, even furthermore, I was never a part of a training camp that tackled to the ground. So.
Right.
Preseason game one and, you know, game two were our first opportunities to go full on live. And that's why I think sometimes you see, you know, sloppy defensive performances, because you're not tackling guys to the ground. And in some live situations, and as we've talked about, the, you know, the siren period that Hugh Jackson has created here, and then to crank things up with a visit like this. And I actually think this works as an advantage. Some people were maybe judging having this opportunity so late into the preseason. I think it works as an advantage, as opposed to, because earlier in training camp, you really don't know who you are. And you know, we've been missing guys, and to get them back for this week of work puts, you know, a little bit more onus on Friday night as the true mock game of what we're going to look like. And then I think it's also fresh in our mind in regards to where we need, what level we need to crank our mental state, you know, emotional state and physical state, because September 11th is now what? How many days? 17 days away, 16 days away. So I think it creeps you closer to be able to push that button in regards to, rather than earlier in camp, you crank it up and then you tone it down and then you try to crank it up again.
You do. And I think one of the things you talked about it being later this week for me, I think I was really able to see kind of the cream rise, and to see, I think the 53-man roster is taking much clearer shape, because you get into the same routines and the same habits against the same guys. But when you go out there for 2 days in a row in pads, and they were in pads both days, and practice against another team that doesn't know your tendencies, you don't know theirs yet, I think you really get an idea of where you are and how you actually measure up. And I think one thing that I've seen with this Browns team there is that the starters are starting to separate themselves. The guys that are going to be the backups that make this team are seriously separating themselves from the guys that are not going to be here soon.
And that's what training camp is all about. I really do think, and for the Cleveland Browns, it may have happened a little bit later into training camp, you know, going into this third game where we're still figuring things out and using this week in Tampa to really, you know, figure that out as well. But for a lot of teams, as you and I, we could probably say at this point right now, you can probably pick 50 of the 53 that are going to make this final roster. Whereas for New England and Green Bay, you know, you might have been able to do that a week ago, because there's not so much disparity, at, you know, in regards to the talent, where we're turning things around, and not necessarily saying it's a rebuild, but we're starting from the ground up with a bunch of young talent. We've got to see who's hungry, who's fitting this new Hugh Jackson mentality, and meeting the needs and demands of their coaches on what they expect each and every practice and each and every football game on the field.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, decisions are coming after this game. You go from 90 to 75, and I think it's fairly, you know, easy to see how you can get there. I think there will be some tough decisions for the 53, but I also think it's starting to be clear that there are some positions on this team that I wouldn't be surprised if, when the final 53 is set, that some of those guys on that at certain positions maybe weren't with the Browns until they make final cuts. You know what
sure.
I mean? That they try to go ahead and do what, you know, address holes that they feel like they can't address internally at this time. But overall, coming away from here, you know, it's so funny. When would you ever, and we talked with a Tampa reporter yesterday, we'll talk with another Tampa reporter, Jenna Lane from ESPN.com, today at about 1:30. You know, when have you ever heard all the Tampa guys were like, we just can't wait to see your receivers. We can't do it. That's all. We just want to see your receivers. I mean, it's crazy.
It is crazy. And I think it goes to show, if it's already crept its way into Tampa, you got to imagine that that's reverberating within the walls of the Ravens facility, the Steelers facility, and the Bengals facility, having to see these guys twice, because we'll have Josh Gordon back and have played, no, minus maybe the Ravens week two. That's my fault. But, you know, majority of the games we'll have Josh Gordon healthy and back in the swing of things. Terrell Pryor, Corey Coleman, Andrew Hawkins, Gary Barnage, everything that, you know, you've kind of dreamt about. Those are a legitimate concern for a defensive coordinator in our division. And as you've said time and time again, that it's going to be a shootout at the OK Corral now at First Energy Stadium and amongst our division. Now you look at the offenses with Roethlisberger and Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown and Sammy Coates. And then you look at what, you know, a rejuvenated Flacco. And then, of course, down in Cincinnati with Andy Dalton and A.J. Green. I mean, it's the defenses in this division, I think, is where the spotlight is really shining, because every offense now that Cleveland has got the wide receivers where they are with Duke and Crowell in the backfield are going to put points on the board. And it's just a matter of,
yes,
can a defense stop them? Can a defense affect the passer? And can the defense get off on third down and produce takeaways?
Yes, I think, and you're exactly right about that. It's going to come down, the overall success, I think, this team is going to come down to what it can do defensively. And I thought we saw some improvement, and I'll tell you, Joe Hayden on the field looks as good to me as he's ever looked. And what do I mean by that? He looks fast. He looks strong. He's certainly playing with a chip on his shoulder. Had an interception each of the 2 days from Jameis Winston. So going against the first team offense, he had an interception in each of those 2 days, which I thought was very, very good
to
see.
I'll take that.
And yeah, of course. And, you know, one of the things we were saying, playmakers on offense, playmaker, playmaker, playmaker. Who are the playmakers on this defense? And I think one of them is going to have to be, of course, Joe Hayden.
Yes.
He's got to step up, and he's got to be that guy for this team on defense, where he can free up other people to try and make plays themselves. Because right now, you know, we really haven't seen that. And now getting him back and seeing against Mike Evans and seeing it against Vincent Jackson certainly is something that is encouraging. But there is still much, much, much work to be done on the defensive side. And from what I've heard and kind of what I sense watching those guys out there, the defensive guys, you know, knowing Hugh Jackson like I do and knowing the way that he motivates and the way that he lets people know what's unacceptable, there was a serious sense of urgency, I would say, especially with the defensive front and in particular Danny Shelton against the Bucks in these practices. And I did see him collapse the pocket a couple times and push back at the point of attack as opposed to kind of not, as you say, sometimes he catches, and seeing him a little bit more aggressive, which was good to see. Now, I'm not going to say that everything is fixed on the defense, not by a long shot. I think it will be a very good test of them, you know, and a good test of this defense against Tampa with Doug Martin, the second leading rusher in the NFL. But it's hard to tell when they're not tackling to the ground, because missed tackles are something that's plagued this team. So when you don't get to know if a tackle's missed or made, it's hard to say. But I definitely saw some aggression.
I love hearing that, and I love hearing that about Danny Shelton in particular. You know, as I've questioned, you know, not him as a player or can he play at this level, but how he's playing in this scheme, because I know what is asked of the nose tackle in a very dominant 3-4 defense. And you know what? You mentioned the chip on the shoulder in regards to the defense and specifically Danny Shelton. And at this point right now, and I know it's just the preseason and we've yet to, you know, kick off the 2016 season, but we're in the thick of it. And the one thing that if I were a linebacker, either on special teams as a backup or a starter on this team, is I would have a chip on my shoulder, because all signs are pointing, as you've said, as they've done down there in Tampa and also in the first two preseason games, our offense is going to score points, okay? And I would hate for this team to maybe realistic, and I'm talking realistic expectations, to go 5-11 or 6-10 and have a defense that was a sieve again and just say, because we couldn't stop this team and this team, that cost us from going 7-9. Or 8-8, or maybe getting lucky and going 9-7. You know what I mean? And so
yes,
that would motivate me, that if the offense is ahead and the offense is going to score points, and I don't want to be the guy on January 2nd that goes, man, if we could have just kept teams to, you know, 115 yards on the ground instead of 135, or limited, or had, or so-and-so would have caught this pick and we would have sacked, you know, the guy in this. You don't want to look back on this season defensively and go, if we just would have done this, the season would have been that much better and that much different, because you and I both know this team's going to take a step because they've got the right man in charge. The offense is going to be significantly different. The one thing you don't want to look back on is, and this is specifically to the defense, is to go back and go, oh, we could have done this, we should have done that, we could have done this instead. And so we're settling for a small incremental step, even though collectively, you know, there's improvement and you can, and there's some things we can spotlight and shine the light on. But then we go, if we just would have done this, we would have taken that next step. And that puts a lot of people nationally on watch for the Cleveland Browns to go, man, 3-13 to 7-9 is a big step in year one. And they shut this, you know, they shut out the Ravens in a game and they shut down Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown. This team is ready in 17 and they have all those picks and they're just getting younger. That's what I don't want to look back and regret.
I agree with you, and I think it's imperative that we see steps forward and identify some of those guys on the defense that can be the stalwarts of a defense that you build to hopefully match your offense, because it is amazing to think that in 1 year how things have changed. But now, the defense did struggle at times last year, but this was a team where we always thought it was going to be about the defense carrying the offense and making up for their inadequacies, whereas this year it's certainly the offense that seems to be the side of the football that everybody's excited about, and with good reason, and everybody's more confident in. And you know, Robert Griffin III, 2 good days of practice, and I think some good learning. And
has he thrown a pick? Did he throw one away?
He did. He threw a couple picks. He threw one to Vernon Hargraves III 2 days ago. I think he may have thrown one yesterday as well, but he threw a lot of touchdowns, and I would say his completion percentage was very, 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 very high. And it looked at times very good, and like you'd expect a team to look in 7-on-7 and 11-on-11, where the ball just wasn't hitting the ground.
Sure.
And so that was good to see, good rhythm, and it was funny. Hugh Jackson praised Robert Griffin III, and I'm sure you saw the quote and heard from RG3 that, you know, he sometimes he gets more excited about when he checks down, when Robert Griffin III makes the correct check down and goes through his progressions,
then
when he throws an 80-yard bomb, right, which is good because at the end of the day, we know what his upside is in the talent, but to get there and to be able to do it consistently, he's got to be – it's a progression-based offense, and he's got to make the right reads more often than not. And there was a touchdown he threw to Randall Telfer, which reminded me in practice, reminded me of one of the good plays that we got excited about where he went boom, 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 and it was his third read and made the throw. He did another big long pass to Gary Barnage on a corner route where he looked at a crosser coming in front of him, looked at the vertical on the left side, came all the way back to the right side of the field, and found Barnage. So I thought it was very, very good to see, and there's still work in progress, but the reason for optimism is clearly there, and I wish you were here to have seen the first moments of Gordon, Pryor, and Coleman on the field together, because it's crazy. And for those, I'll say it again, and I know people listen, a lot of you listen every day, and we appreciate that, but Josh Gordon is not out of shape. He had his shirt up halfway yesterday. He has a six-pack. He is ripped. He is just flat-out ginormous right now.
That's good. And you know what? I wish I could be there too, but it is very encouraging. And even just going back to that comment about, you know, he raves about the check down and overlooks the deep pass. And you know what that is? That's Hugh Jackson's version of tough love for RG3. And I think it's only progressing him as a quarterback on the field because he expects you to make that deep ball throw. Because I think, and in some cases for quarterbacks in general, and this goes from every level, it's everybody wants to be the gunslinger that throws it down the field. And I think if you go back to Green Bay, you know, week one when he threw the pick, even though it was, you know, they kind of took accountability for the interception, each of them, Barnage and RG3, it makes a coach happy. A coach would rather live to play another day than you force one down the field or force one into coverage, it get picked off, going the other way. Take the check down, take 4 or 5 yards, you know, Duke Johnson in space over a forced interception is a great thing. And that to me is an indication that Hugh Jackson and his mentality is creeping into RG3, that he's making it's making the right decisions more than anything.
It is more than anything, but you know, and I like it too. It's an attention to the little things. Making
Correct.
The right check down is a valuable thing. It keeps the chains moving. It keeps your team going. It prevents turnovers, forcing throws, sacks, etc. And there was a similar moment yesterday that I talked about on the show, but again, I'll mention it with Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon on one play ran a great route, didn't get the ball, and the ball went somewhere else, immediately turned around and started blocking, and Al Saunders went bananas, loving what he was doing. And of course, Al Saunders gets excited about everything that these guys do positively, but he's also tough on them, and he threw out one line to a receiver, and you'll probably like this. He said to this particular receiver on this play, and I won't name who it was, but he said, "You don't get enough reps to run that route anything less than 100%. Don't ever do that again. You don't get enough reps to do that," which I thought was strong.
That is a strong point, and I think that is hopefully a message that was overheard by someone well beyond just a wide receiver, because for some of the guys that are bottom quartile fighting to make this roster who are on limited reps, and I've talked about this before, they need to be darn near perfect, which is almost impossible in the NFL, but the one thing that they can control is their effort. You know, running to the football, wrapping a guy up, that doesn't take a whole lot of talent. That doesn't take, you know, you don't have to be blessed to run to the football. It has to be your innate ability to soak in what is expected of me as a defensive player for the Cleveland Browns and getting where I'm supposed to be. And like I've said before, a coach would rather have the guy going 100 miles an hour than the guy trying to tiptoe out there and be perfect.
Agreed, and to back to your point about effort, so that's what he was excited about. Josh Gordon was a guy that you heard never, you know, didn't always put in all the effort. Well, you're seeing him block down the field like a beast, and that made Al Saunders excited. And he said to me as he's walking, he's like, "This guy has been an absolute coach's dream since he's been back," which is great to see. And then the next play, they did a run to his side where he was supposed to come down and kind of crack back, and he just missed the block. He was a split second late on the block, and Al Saunders didn't have to say anything. Gordon slapped his hands in disgust, was like, "Come on," and then went and continued to block. But and Al was standing right there, and you could just watch him coach and said, "That's what I want to see." He's coaching himself. He's policing himself, and he's holding himself to a standard, and that makes me excited.
It really does, and I think it goes back to another player, as we saw in the offseason and even early in training camp, who I know is kind of, you know, had a little bit of up and down play in preseason game one and two is Justin Gilbert. For the first time in a long time, what we saw emotionally on the practice field was Justin Gilbert caring about having bad technique, caring about a ball being caught on him, you know, or and just essentially not playing his role. So it does frustrate him, and that's a good thing to see. And I think that's the little things that have crept into this roster, that these guys are caring more about doing things right and wrong and letting their teammates and coaches down than they ever have before.
And it's good to see. Now, one position I am concerned about, and this was a good test because you saw Mike Evans, Vincent Jackson, some good receivers. I think the corners, Joe Hayden looked good. Jamar Taylor looked good. Tremont Williams looked very good. Gilbert had a very difficult day yesterday, a very difficult day. He struggled a little bit yesterday. And then beyond that, it's wide open. And I think that that's a position where we may see guys not on the Browns this offseason coming in to play corner. I think, you know, we don't know what's going on with the Kaywan Williams situation, but my sense of it is, you know, maybe he's not – you can't count on him, let's put it that way, to be back and to be with his team. So Charles Gaines has got to step up. Or you'd like to see somebody from the Gaines group step up, Pierre Desir. Tracy Howard has kind of, you know, as he kind of shot up and was given more opportunities, I think he's had a little bit of a rougher go since that Atlanta game. I think that the corners, your top three you're feeling pretty good about. Gilbert, I think, is a fourth you feel pretty good about. And then after that, I think that's an opportunity where guys have a chance to really seize a job. So if you want something to watch in this game, watch the corners that come in with the second and third teams and see if anybody comes out there and balls out. I think that would be something you definitely can keep your eye on to see what's going on with this team.
Got it.
Yes, sir. All right. Speaking of, we've got a lot coming up here on this show. We do want to hear from you, 216-578-0850. You can tweet us as well, at Nathan Zagura, at Matt Wilhelm, 35, at Browns underscore daily. Coming up at 1:30, Jenna Lane, the ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the Bucks, will be with us to tell you what she saw this week on practice from both sides of things. But when we come back, let's hear from you. We'll take your calls, 216-578-0850. Zagura, Wilhelm, back together on CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, of course, Matt Wilhelm there in Berea with you. Want to give you guys a little bit of insight into Sashi Brown, who spoke with the media today, and we'll talk with Mary Kay Cabot in the second hour about what she saw the joint week of practice. She was also in this conference with Sashi Brown, and this is what he said about the Josh Gordon situation. Speaking to reporters on Thursday, Browns Executive Vice President of Football Operations Sashi Brown said it was a mischaracterization to say that the team has heard multiple offers from other clubs about acquiring Gordon. He also said that it was speculation. I'm not going to entertain that the Browns floated word of those offers because they would like to deal Gordon rather than run the risk of losing him to another suspension. We are not looking to trade Josh Gordon, Brown said via Cleveland.com. Now, it's interesting. He said, I'm not going to just enter into any of the speculation. I understand what the interest is in Josh. There are literally hundreds of conversations going on around the league about players all the time. And if we get into speculating about all the reports and what could be going on and what conversations could be going on, we'd be here for much longer time than we have. Brown said that Gordon is a great weapon for our offense, and they are viewing him as that rather than one for somebody else. He said that Gordon fits in the same category as every other player does in terms of having a price that could sway Cleveland, but again said they're not looking to trade him. I hope that they don't trade him. I don't want to see it. I don't want to have any part of it. I want to see what can happen with Josh Gordon. Now, he's saying they're not looking. That's not the same thing as coming out and saying flat out, we're not going to trade Josh Gordon. And I think that it's probably smart not to pigeonhole yourself, because if somebody called up and said, hey, we're going to give you a first and a second and another first for Josh Gordon, of course you're going to trade him. But I would like to see what Josh Gordon can do as a Cleveland Brown, and hopefully we get that opportunity.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. And I think that, and I might have been on Bleacher Report, that it was a conditional sixth is something that I think has come up in exchange for Josh Gordon. And
somebody offered a conditional sixth round pick for Josh Gordon.
There's absolutely no way I would give up an asset like Josh Gordon with the good and the bad. And at this point right now, I want to see the development and growth from Josh Gordon as a person and a player with Hugh Jackson looking over his shoulder every day.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that Josh Gordon, this is his chance to show what he can do. He's a restricted free agent at the end of the year, so you're going to be able to retain his rights or certainly make it so that, you know, if you did lose him, you would be losing something significant, whether it be a first round, getting something significant, a first round pick, etc. So I hope he is here. That's what I hope. I have faith in Sashi Brown and what they're going to do, but I certainly hope he's here because it's been fun watching him. I like Josh. I feel like this is a guy that gets it, but I understand the risk side of it too, because we've liked Josh and been enamored with him, and he's come back before, and then he's gone away again. So my goal, if you're asking, you know, what I would like to see and what I think that the Dog Pound wants to see, you know, is that Josh Gordon is a Cleveland Brown.
Yeah,
so
and
I don't want to see him go anywhere.
I don't either, and I think to the, you know, the latter portion of your last comment is with the emergence of Terrell Pryor, with the drafting of Corey Coleman.
Still, and yes, he is emerging, but still we have, like, see it in NFL real games week in and week out with Terrell. I think that
it's
exciting upside.
I agree, but that's why I said emerging as an NFL wide receiver. You have Corey Coleman, who's yet to play a game, but everybody's, you know, extremely high on what he's capable of doing. You've got Andrew Hawkins, and you've got an opportunity to reload next year. So you might as well keep and maintain Josh Gordon, and if he doesn't walk the walk that Hugh Jackson, Jimmy Haslam, and Sashi Brown have asked him to walk, at that point you part with him. But as of right now, he's been, you know, a model citizen, a great pupil in Al Saunders' room, and proving that he continued to play at a high level out on the football field.
Absolutely. We want to see it happen. Let's go to the phone lines. Jim in Akron right now.
Hey, fellas. What's going on?
Good, man. How are you?
You know, one day at a time.
I hear you.
You know, to say about what you guys said about Gordon, you know, he's more valuable to us, whether you know, I mean, I always put faith that he's not going to mess up again. And I think that with Hugh Jackson and Saunders, I think, you know, and just seeing how he's, you know, he's showing that he wants to be here. You know, he said all the right things before, but you know what? He's a hard guy not to like. I mean, you know, he's a young kid.
He's a good young man.
I mean, if we were held to those high standards, you know, when we were in college and just out, you know, I'm sure we did a few things that we probably don't want to brag about. And he hasn't really committed a crime. I mean, speeding, yeah, haven't we all sped? You know, if we had the sports car that he had, we probably would go just as fast as he did. But I really believe that, you know, we're showing a lot on offense, and I think with these young, hungry kids on defense, you know, I definitely don't think all the media that says we're the worst or the second worst team in the league, I think that's BS. You know, maybe it's the optimistic Browns fan in me, but I believe we're going to do okay. You know,
I'm with you. I don't think we're going to be one of the
playoffs.
Worst teams.
I mean, I know that might be asking a lot. Sorry. I might be asking a lot, but you know what? Why can't we go 10-6? And surprise some people.
Yeah, I think we will surprise some people, and I think that's what Hugh Jackson demands. And one of the other parts that came out of what Sashi Brown said today is that they want to win now, and I think that they believe that they can score points with anybody in this league. And I believe, and that they also feel that Ray Horton will get this defense where it needs to be, so that they can go out and have success, and have success sooner than most people think they can have success. And I want to see it. And I can't wait to see this offense week one. And I really can't wait to see it week five when Gordon comes back from that suspension.
Yeah. And Nathan, you know, what's one key thing is if this team comes out of the gates and has momentum and is surprising people, this locker room is going to be a buzz. The work that they put out on the practice field when they feel like they're playing for something, which, you know, you can't say for many weeks in the past, say 5 years, they really have. They're going to build even further belief in Hugh Jackson and these coaches. They're going to build a ton of belief in themselves. And that whole mindset nationally and even sometimes locally about same old Browns is eradicated based on the way in which they came out of the gate. So I think that's a big factor too. Going to Philly and stealing a game, getting pumped up and jacked for the Dog Pound at the home opener, and potentially going to 2-0 against your rivals in our division, right? Is a huge, huge thing for this football team, because then you start looking at our schedule and you dive. Okay, so you go on the road for the next two. I think Miami's in flux. Washington, who knows what they're going to be, but I mean, they've got a good football team. And then, you know, again, the next week, week five, we get Gordon back. And not that everything changes, but you just add another big bullet to our gun that has already been firing very well.
I agree. There. I want to see it. I can't wait to see it. And for those people who say, how many chances does Josh Gordon get? Look, he got reinstated by the league. He's got to sit out the four games, and then it's going to be on him to get it done and to hold up his end of the bargain. If he wants to achieve what he wants to on the field, off the field, and believe me, if he does, it's good for the Cleveland Browns. If Josh Gordon can stay on the field, it will be a good thing for the Cleveland Browns in the dog pound, and I think everybody will be happy, especially Hugh Jackson, to have another weapon like that at his disposal. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Jenna Lane from ESPN, their ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the Buccaneers. She's been at the joint practices. We'll talk to her about what she saw from the Browns, what she thinks about the Bucs and tomorrow's game right here on Cleveland Browns Daily.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. What would happen if you
got with me? Well, welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura here in Tampa. Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea as we get ready for preseason game number three, the Browns and the Bucks. But already a lot of work done in Tampa. They've had the 2 days of joint practices, and joining us now on the Ohio Business Machines hotline to talk about them, Jenna Lane, the ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the Buccaneers. Jenna, good to talk to you. It's been a while.
Good to talk to you as well, and I apologize that we've had such bad weather down here. You know, the fact that it's rained the last 2 days, and I know it's only rained briefly, but still, between that and then it's just been so oppressively hot out there on the field. Got a little bit of shade yesterday, but I still feel bad for all the people that are visiting here.
You know what? It's okay. It's been hot in Cleveland. We're used to it, although that first day of practice was obscenely hot down there. Yes, and it rained as soon as I got to the pool. So maybe today,
yes,
I'm going to get some pool time, which I'm hoping for. But appreciate
that. Fingers crossed for that.
Yes, fingers are crossed. Jenna, what were your first kind of just overall impressions of what you saw in those joint practices, either from a Bucs perspective or a Browns perspective?
Well, you know, first and foremost, Dirk Koetter, when he found out that the Bucs were going to be playing the Browns in the preseason, he was stoked because of the fact that, you know, the Bucs are going to be facing 8-3-4 defenses, and it's so tough to be able to simulate that in practice. And so he immediately reached out to Hugh Jackson to try to get this thing to happen, just because he really felt like, you know, his quarterback, Jameis Winston, really needed to see, because it is very confusing. I mean, especially, you know, you throw in, you know, that type of defense, you know, Ray Horton's defense, the fact that, you know, they like to blitz a lot more than a typical 3-4. And, you know, when you're a quarterback, a young quarterback, trying to figure out all those protections and everything, and they have a young offensive line as well, they just really thought it was a good opportunity for them. So I'll tell you what, the first day you did see some hiccups there. I mean, I don't really think that anybody wants, you know, a small running back having to try and go up against the likes of Paul Kruger, but that did happen there. You
yes.
can imagine the success rate wasn't too high on that. But, you know, it was just good work for them to be able to see something that they're going to be seeing as early as week two. And then, you know, on the other side, you know, defensively, the Bucs, you know, first of all, they really need to be able to see a team that does run a zone read. They also really need to be able to continue going up against some of these really good wide receivers. And then when you consider the fact that, you know, the Bucs, these DBs allowed 60% completions last year, and then on third down, they were about 46% of opponents' third down conversions. So they have a lot of work to do in that area. It was a really good test for them this week.
And, Jenna, and that's one of the reasons, the point of emphasis, Brent Grimes, Vernon Hargraves III were brought in here to try to shore that up.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? I'll tell you what. I mean, Hargraves got some work in right away, having to go up against – and this is Hargraves' first week actually practicing with the first-team defense on the outside. He was practicing with the first-team defense nickel, but he hadn't done it yet outside. And so this was his first week doing that. And he's got to go up against Corey Coleman. He had Josh Gordon. Terrell Pryor, continue to be impressed with him and the way he's made that transition to wide receiver. That's been really impressive to watch.
Jenna, the one thing that was impressive was Jameis Winston towards the second half of the year, once he really got acclimated to the NFL game. Just talk about some of the things that Jameis Winston really wanted to hone in on and improve on from year one to year two, and have you been seeing that out of him at training camp thus far?
Well, the obvious thing is not just the weight loss, but he really wanted to get stronger and be in better shape, because he had just never had a true off season. He was always playing baseball in college during what would have been his off season for football. And so he really wanted to get stronger, improve his core strength, you know, improve his legs. And, you know, in turn, he also wanted to clean up his diet as well. That was done more because of longevity. I mean, he saw guys when he went to the Pro Bowl, he saw how meticulous they were with their diets, and realized that, you know what, if you want a really long career in the NFL, and a guy like Vincent Jackson's a great example of it, you really have to take care of your body, and you've got to fuel your body properly. And so, you know, he didn't deprive himself, but he did cut out potato chips. You know, he stopped eating after, I want to say, 7 o'clock. He was able to drop somewhere around 20 pounds or so. But again, the focus was more on getting him stronger as well. You know, we worked out with Michael Jordan's former trainer, Tim Grover. And, you know, I had asked his quarterbacks coach, Mike Bajakian, you know, it's great if he's doing all these things in the offseason, but is it translating out onto the field? Is it translating into what you're seeing, you know, when you guys are practicing together? And he thought so, because, I mean, Jameis, he's one of those guys, he's always had to kind of clean up his footwork and things like that. And Coach Bajakian told me, you know, you clean up that footwork, everything else is going to fall into place. He's going to have a much better base. You know, when he's throwing, he can be much more accurate. And that's the thing, you know, sometimes he does throw those interceptions and sometimes he puts a little bit too much on his throws. But, you know, if he is a little bit stronger with his footwork and everything, you know, those other things will all fall into place.
Yeah, and just watch, seeing Jameis up close, he looks like a different guy. I mean, his body physically looks different. He's clearly put in hard work on that physique. Talking with Jenna Lane, the ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the Buccaneers. Jenna, you'd heard a lot, I'm sure, coming in, especially after the game against Atlanta, that this Browns offense looks like one that can put some points on the scoreboard. After 2 days of the joint practices, what were your impressions of RG3 in this offense?
Oh, definitely. And I'll tell you what, you know, I was not ready to write RG3 off. I thought he needed a new change, a new environment. And, you know, I've just heard such great things about Hugh Jackson. So when he got the opportunity in Cleveland, I didn't feel like he got a fair shake out in Oakland. And everybody's told me, you know, if there's somebody that can get RG3, you know, back to the way he was, whether it's thinking confidently or just playing like the player that he's capable of being, it is Hugh Jackson. So, and I have to say, you know, this was a real challenge for the Bucs offense going up against them. I mean, you always have to account, you know, for Robert being that runner. You're always going to count for him being an extra runner. But also, you know, as a passer, I don't know if he gets enough credit for really doing that. And, you know, at times, I mean, Vernon Hargreaves, it was great to see him pick him off twice. That was really a feather in his cap on both those occasions. But at the same time, you know, you also saw instances, you know, where they gave up plays in the red zone. And so I think just it was a really competitive practice back and forth. I definitely feel like the Browns had the Bucs number on the first day. And I think things were a little bit more evenly matched on the second day there, though. But I think Cleveland's going to surprise the people. I really do.
Jenna, you referenced the young offensive line. How have those guys come together? And is that going to hinder the type of year that Doug Martin had last year to have another franchise-type year as he led, you know, a second in the league last year in rushing?
Well, and you know what? You mentioned that. It's pretty impressive, the fact that Doug Martin was able to do that. And yes, he did have Logan Mankins on the inside, you know, creating holes for him, but he also had Ali Marpet, who had made the jump from Division III Hobart to starting in the NFL, and he made the jump from lining up as a tackle to lining up as a guard. And, you know, people sometimes think that, oh, you know, you can just shuffle these guys around. It's not that easy. I mean, there are specific traits that, you know, guards playing on the inside, people think you can just, well, if he's not good enough or he's not suitable to be an offensive tackle, yeah, just move him inside. Things happen a lot faster there. And so I was impressed with the way Marpet was able to make that jump. And then Donovan Smith, you know, protecting Jameis, you know, that left tackle, for him to be able to do that as a rookie, at times, you know, he got schooled a little bit. I remember in the preseason last year, Everson Griffin really put the moves on him. But I felt like he never made the same mistake twice. So he's gotten a lot better. And I think those guys are going to be better this year. The one thing that's hurting the Bucs right now offensively with the O-line is that Marpet showed up in a walking boot. We still don't know how it happened. We don't know what play it happened on, but lo and behold, he shows up to practice this week in a walking boot. And so now they don't have him. They also don't have J.R. Sweezy, who the team signed to replace Logan Mankins, and he has yet to take a snap. No snap this offseason, no snap in camp, because he still hasn't been cleared after having a back procedure. And so now suddenly they're like really thin at the guard position. They've moved Kevin Pamphiel. He was an offensive tackle. They moved him to the inside, but he's been getting some work there this whole offseason. So he's not as shell as just someone would be if you had to move him outside, inside this time of year. And then, you know, they also have, because Evan Smith played guard up in Green Bay, they do have the luxury of moving him there. But other than that, I mean, they're really thin. And then Caleb Beninok, you know, he was a draft pick this year, missed time the offseason because of UCLA's academic calendar and the way that goes. They're off quarters.
That happened with us.
So he comes
Payton
into training camp, and then all of a sudden he comes into training camp, and he can't practice either because he hurts his ankle. He just now started taking snaps out there.
So, Jenna, you would say that given, you know, I don't know if you've kept up on the Browns' first two preseason games. I would imagine probably not. But the defense has been on the field for 40 minutes in each of those games, and the run defense, which was a problem in 2015, a problem in 2014 when they were last in the league, has been a big problem. And if you're a Browns fan, you're saying given the issues on the interior of that offensive line, this is a game where the Browns' run defense should show some signs of life, and if not, it should be a real warning sign?
I think so. I think they should show some signs of life, just especially because there's been a lot of change there. I mean, although I will have to say, in practice, I was impressed with the way some of these guys, like I mentioned Paul Kruger a few minutes ago, which that's never a guy you need to be concerned with, but the way in which DeMar Dotson handled him, although you would expect it, I mean, he was, okay, this is a much better fit for some guy that's going to be protecting Jameis versus a running back in Charles Sims. There's a little bit of a height and size differential there. But, yeah, I would think that, especially, too, with the fact that this is a Browns defense that missed assignments, they seem to really predicate themselves on that. They have so many of those exotic blitzes. I'm sure they'll probably keep it, you know, a little bit under wraps and not show too much during the preseason. But I still think that they're going to win some plays against the Bucs. I think that that's kind of a given there.
In the 2 days that you got to see Joe Hayden go against this Buccaneers team, and that's really the first time he's gone against another team in a long time, did he look like the Joe Hayden of old to you?
Oh, I think so. And, of course, you know, familiar with Joe Hayden and his time at Florida. I mean, and Jameis Winston was very complimentary of him. He was actually more complimentary of that defensive front just because of all the fact that, you know, you don't know whether you're going to have – I mean, you could have three down linemen, you could have four, you could have five, and the fact that, you know, I mean, they can rush six at you or they could just, you know, drop, you know, eight guys into coverage, you know. But he was very impressed with what he saw from that secondary, and Hayden especially. And I think Hayden definitely challenged – you know, all the Bucs receivers, which is really good to see.
All right, Jenna, did you ever think you'd be talking about a kicker as much as you have been early?
Oh, my
God.
I've said that to a few people, and it's been crazy. And I saw him throughout college. I mean, he was a money guy, but he was a money guy because he could make kicks, like, you know, inside the 40 automatically. But, man, I mean, it's tough, and it's really tough seeing a player who you had these types of expectations with, and the fact that, you know, the day he was drafted, general manager Jason Light said, we needed to be bold, and we were. And he mentions, you know, Janikowski, and he mentions Steven Gostkowski, and you're just like, wow, you know, this is how he views this guy. And, of course, he makes mention of the fact that he's the most accurate kicker in college football history. You would think that he could handle the pressure, but the one thing I would point out to people is it was a little different in college because, you know, Florida State could just easily put points on the board, and if Jameis threw an interception, no big deal, they'd march back down the field. You know, this is an offense that's still kind of finding its way, and you know, receivers had seven drops, for instance, the first week against Philadelphia, and so these touchdowns aren't a given, which means that a lot more pressure is on them. It's just really surprising to see the way in which this pressure is just manifested into a complete meltdown.
Yes, it's certainly been interesting to see. I kind of felt bad for him when he kicked that one line drive right into the ground and was booed by the home crowd there at Bucs training camp. Jenna, my last one for you. What's the one thing that you're really going to be focusing on Friday night when these teams actually get out of practice mode and play this third preseason game, the most important of all the preseason games?
Well, and I know it's going to be tough for this offense, but really seeing how they handle this Browns defense because it is so different from what they see. And because, again, week two, they're going to be seeing a 3-4 defense, you know, and I've got a lot of respect for what they're doing in that department with what Ray Horton's doing there. I think that, you know, and I know, you know, he had been there previously and everything, you know, bringing some things back. But just considering, you know, the way in which Jameis has had previous struggles, you know, and the fact that they do disguise coverages. And plus, too, Jameis has got to get off to a faster start. I mean, the last two preseason games waited until the third possession before he was able to score. And actually this past preseason game, he didn't complete an entire pass until the second quarter, the whole first quarter, six
wow.
pass incompletions. He didn't complete a single pass until the second quarter. And that was when he led a touchdown drive. And so, and especially because they're more than likely not going to have Doug Martin, or if they do, it's going to be very minimal touches. And the same thing with Charles Sims, because they just don't believe in, you know, exposing their running backs to a whole lot of wear and tear.
Sure. And it makes sense. The one thing I will say is that surprised me, and I even heard some Bucs fans talking about it. Bucs fans are accustomed to two big receivers, and Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson. People could not believe how big Terrell Pryor and Josh Gordon were as a duo for that Browns team.
Yeah,
was that
definitely.
Something that just kind of stood out?
I can't get over how well Terrell Pryor has made that adjustment to make that transition at this level. It's mind-blowing. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, I saw him working against, you know, Vernon Hargrave, the guy I had a lot of respect for at Florida, and I think he's going to be a really good player. I mean, he was definitely schooling him there. That was impressive. I think at the same time, I think also he had a completion against Brent Grimes, too, you know?
Yep.
And Brent Grimes, I think, I mean, he's been to, what, four Pro Bowls?
Yeah,
that's
a solid
impressive.
Veteran. Yeah, looking good. Yeah. Hopefully it will be fun. And, Jenna, we appreciate the time. You can follow her on Twitter, of course, at Jenna Lane ESPN. That's JennaLaineESPN. Jenna, thanks for the great time, great talk, and it's been good to see you down here again.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nathan, and thank you so much for having me on.
Sure.
Our pleasure. Jenna Lane, ESPN NFL Nation reporter for the Bucks, our guest there. When we come back, we'll hear a little bit from Corey Coleman. We'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. Still to come in hour number two, we're going to go around the league. We're going to get into some Twitter questions, and I've gotten some good ones already during the show. Mary Kay Cabot from the Plain Dealer in ClevelandGot.com at 2:30, and then we're wrapping it up here on this Thursday edition of CBD.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm wrapping up our first hour here. And Matt, I got to tell you, when you hear that the Browns had the number of the Buccaneers in day one of these joint practices, what a difference it is from a year ago. And I remember we had Tony Grossi on, even Gibbs, I don't know if you've heard the word on the street, but Gibbs has been positive and blown away. And he's not even show me Gibbs. He's excited Gibbs.
It must be like
good to see, but
Florida version of Gibbs. You take
it must
him out of
be
Ohio and he gets
Gibbs
optimistic.
Yeah. Somebody said, what is going on? Some other people were tweeting that they like positive Gibbs as their favorite version of Gibbs. And to make sure that it was just, we knew what was going on, we did a guess the stats with him. And they also were able to get in the guess the stats, he was within 10%. By the way, this is just coming, and let me make sure that I'm on the right one here. Okay, Adam Schefter is reporting. Breaking news here on CBD. Adam Schefter is reporting, and it is the real Adam Schefter, but Adam Schefter is reporting that the Browns are trading the sixth overall pick from the 2013 draft, linebacker Barkevius Mingo, to the New England Patriots per a source. Adam Schefter again reporting that the Browns are trading the sixth overall pick from the 2013 draft, and it is the real Adam Schefter. I have verified that. That is the first I've heard about it, obviously, and I will work to get confirmation for you during this show from the Browns if that is possible to do. But, Matt, let's assume that this is real. Your initial reaction?
Not a surprise. And I think, you know, Michael Rega and I spoke about it on Monday as he looked for this week down in Tampa, having a lot on the line for multiple first-round picks of past regimes, one being Barkevius Mingo, another being Justin Gilbert. And I think the writing was kind of on the wall for something like this to happen and for Barkevius Mingo, because Barkevius Mingo is on a guaranteed deal as a first-round pick, so the Browns are in him for the money the same way that we're in him in Justin Gilbert for his money. So cutting him, it becomes – you know, significant portion of dead money for the Browns. So that's why it's valuable for us to continue to develop a guy like Justin Gilbert and not just cut ties with him if there's not a willing trade partner. And in this case, when you look at the player that Barkevius Mingo is, and you look at the makeup of successful linebackers with the New England Patriots, they are that Chandler Jones, tall, gangly, rangy linebacker that somehow, some way, different from any scheme that the Browns have played since Mingo's been here, the New England Patriots, better than anybody else, takes a guy that's never fit in somewhere and fits into their system. So it makes a lot of sense for the Patriots if they have that need and they've liked what they've saw to Barkevius Mingo. I think it, for a guy who was lost on our depth chart, going from multiple positions, defensive line to outside linebacker to now inside linebacker, and really not being a flat-out baller on special teams, I think it's a great decision by Sashi Brown to cut the tie now and allow Barkevius Mingo to dive in and be a player of some sort for the New England Patriots and for us to just gain another asset.
Ian Rappaport reporting that the Browns are working on a deal to trade Mingo to the Patriots, specifics being worked out as we speak. I reached out to a team spokesman for comment while we were on the air here and was told there is nothing official yet, nothing to say at this
there
point
never is.
Yet. So we'll keep an eye on it. If something gets reported, we'll let you know. If I can get any type of confirmation, I will let you guys know that as well. But that is the breaking news right now. Both Adam Schefter, Ian Rappaport reporting that the Browns are working on a deal that would send Barkevius Mingo to the Patriots, who, of course, are going to be without Rob Ninkovich in the short term. They're without Jabal Sheard in the near term as well, and Shea McClellan. So they have injuries at that outside linebacker spot, or, you know, they kind of play that hybrid. Sometimes it's a 4-3, sometimes 3-4, but they need a pass rusher from the edge, and perhaps they've decided on Barkevious Mingo. And for the Browns, you know, Mingo's on the books for $5 million this year. That seems to be you didn't see clearly how he would fit into this plan and how he was fitting into this defense. So if they are able to get some form, I think that would be a good thing. Now, talking about him this morning to reporters, Sashi Brown said he's been showing up on special teams. We'd like to see him show up more in the defense. That was about Barkevious Mingo. And again, the reports are that the Browns are dealing Mingo to the New England Patriots.
And see, Nathan,
we will see what happens
and
there.
And see, Nathan, you know, the one thing that I guess just keeping your ear to the street, and when we leave, you know, Berea, a lot of frustration that lies in the dog pound and many Browns fans is, you know, guys either drafted into big deals like this where they're guaranteed a lot of money and underperform, or guys who then re-sign and are getting paid a lot of money by the Cleveland Browns and not able to perform. Now, that was in years past, you know, with some of the free agent deals. But some of the guys who are on these guaranteed deals making big money and really not worth it to us based on their performance on the football field. So I think this is a great scenario for the Cleveland Browns to take the $5 million off the books. The Patriots will, of course, take that on. We get an asset that, you know, based around what we feel, you know, with, say, 7 of the 14 guys drafted this year are going to be role/starter type players for this year's team. Imagine if we did 50% next year, and depending on where this pick is, if it's fourth round or above, it could be a significant player for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, who knows what the terms will be. And at this point, if you were going to part ways with him anyway, anything you get is a bonus, I guess, at this point, and you take that money off of your books. But Barkevious Mingo just hasn't panned out for him. It'll be interesting to see if this truly does end up happening. Again, Adam Schefter reporting that he will be traded. Ian Rapoport saying that the deal is still being worked on at this time. No official word from the Cleveland Browns on this report that Barkevious Mingo will be moved to the New England Patriots. And I think a lot of you hit the nail on the head when you look at the dog pound. You look at one of the reasons that the Browns have kind of been where they are. There have been a lot of first-round picks in a row that struggled. It was Barkevious Mingo followed by Johnny and Justin Gilbert, and those were, you know, three picks, and two of those in the top 10 that you needed to get more out of than you did, and certainly Gilbert, and then we know what happened with Johnny and Mingo. And I think if this team could start getting those early picks right, it goes a long way to turning it around and turning it around quickly. But it will be interesting to see if this does go down. I think many people were wondering if Mingo would fit on this roster, and I think now if this happens, you certainly have your answer, and that is going to be that he did not fit here, and they were able to find somebody who's going to take an opportunity on his talent there. And, you know, we know Mike Lombardi no longer with the Patriots, but Mike Lombardi was here when the Browns drafted Barkevious Mingo along with Joe Banner, and has been a longtime advisor and confidant to Bill Belichick, and that's a little bit of a connection that you could make there on why they could potentially be interested in Mingo, who the Browns thought enough of to make the 6th overall pick in that 2013 draft.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think a move like this doesn't leave me with any questions. This is very cut and dry because it makes a lot of sense for both teams. And that's, in most cases, why a trade like this was able to be facilitated and probably very quickly. You know, maybe a matter of day or just a few days worth of conversations to make something happen. You know, where in years past, when we sign a guy, when we trade a guy, you know, when we cut a guy, you're kind of left scratching your head, and we really have to get to the bottom of why we did it. But as you and I just laid out in the last, less than 5 minutes, it makes complete sense for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, they declined his fifth-year option. Doesn't look like he had a home here. And I know from years past that the Patriots have been interested in Mingo for a while, and perhaps that could have something to do with the Lombardi connection there. But I know that is a guy that has been on their radar for a while, and now it looks like they may have the opportunity to get him. Again, we can't say it now. Pro Football Talk is saying that the Browns trade, this is Mike Florio reporting, Browns trade Barkevious Mingo to the Patriots, saying that using the word trade, not they're working on a trade. So that'll be something to watch there. Pro Football Talk reporting it. But it seems like there's plenty of smoke amongst the top NFL insiders at this point. And if we can get any kind of confirmation for you, we will let you know. And I would expect the compensation. Don't expect much, is what I would say. Probably a conditional pick of some kind for Barkevious Mingo, because this is a guy that's costing a lot of money and has not yet, to this point, you know, produced in the NFL commensurate with that pay or his draft status as of yet, but maybe a change of scenery will do him well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we are going to hear from Corey Coleman, the Browns wide receiver. We'll also go around the league. But again, if you're just joining us, and Zagura and Wilhelm here, you can get your questions into us on Twitter for the mailbag. We're going to do that again today. Mary Kay Cabot at 2:30. And the rumor is right now that the Browns will be trading Barkevius Mingo, outside linebacker, to the New England Patriots. No word on compensation. Again, no official word from the team, but Schefter, Rappaport, Florio, all reporting it right now on Twitter. We'll be back with more CBD right after this.